The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Tuesday, April 16, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Another beautiful day on the plains and another great day to talk all things sports. And we've got a lot of that to do today. So many things with Auburn that we need to get to. There's some basketball news. There's some football things to talk about. Excited to get to all of the biggest news around the world of sports. Coming up in hour number two at 3:15, Double D, Daryl Dapperge, will be joining us on the phone lines as he does every Tuesday. He'll be joining us for 30 minutes. We'll talk about all the things going on around Auburn, football, basketball, baseball, you name it. We'll cover it with Double D coming up in hour number two. So excited to get to that point, but excited to get back into this routine and this rotation as the spring is in the heart of it. We get into the rest of spring, into the summer. We're bringing in and bringing back good friend of ours of the show, Lindsey Crosby, is with us in the studio for all of hour number one. Great to have you back, man. It's always a good time when you're in the studio.
Hey, I'm excited to be here because one, I sound great in these microphones, but then two, we get an hour to talk ball, and it's always nice to have an hour to talk ball.
Yes, it is. And the last time you were here, it was a little bit rushed. We had just the 30 minutes, but we normally in the past we've done it for an hour, about an hour a week is kind of where we are, and that's really good. It's a good segment of time to talk about the Atlanta Braves. We get to talk Major League Baseball storylines, and then of course the thing that a lot of people are all sorts of fired up about around town is Auburn baseball, and we finally get to bring a baseball guy in here to really explain what in the world's going on that side of things. So I'm sure you're excited to do that. But that'll be coming up in the back part of this first hour. Phone lines are open. If you've got questions, comments, concerns for me, and more importantly for Lindsey Crosby, you can give us a call, 334-321-1390. That's the number to get you through to us talking baseball all in hour number one. And we got to start with the Braves because that's what we normally do. And they got off to a good start in the series against the Astros. Always a big time when these two teams get together. They've had some historic games and series over their history. And so far, the Braves are doing pretty much what they're supposed to be doing. 10 wins, 5 losses. They're sitting at first in the NL East, and all things are good so far early on in Atlanta.
Yeah, this is something where, like, we knew they were going to be good this year, right? We didn't know when Spencer Strider went down and some of those starts you saw from some of the rotation, Strider, Freed, etc., what exactly they would look like. But it's really, minus some homer production, which will come when it warms up, Atlanta has really picked up where they left off last year. I mean, they have not yet lost a series. That Mets series, Game 4 is rescheduled for September, so technically they did not lose that. They didn't lose the series. They're down 2-1, but they didn't lose the series. So they haven't lost a series yet, and they've had some impressive performances. The Diamondbacks went to the World Series. Atlanta swept them, despite Max Fried getting blown up in the first, right?
Yeah.
They went into Philly to open the season like they do. They've gone to Philly to open the season more than they've opened the season in Truist Park since the ballpark opened.
I mean, how does that even happen?
It is what it is. But they win that, and then now they're in Houston and not only win the game against the Astros, but also potentially knock out Josh Hader for the rest of the series, which is really big for Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And you get that first win over Houston in Houston, part of this road trip with the Miami game and the Marlins, I should say, and then you have this Astros. And so overall, I mean, we're going to get to the storylines of Major League Baseball because there are so many of them. But with this Braves team, I mean, They're just kind of doing what they're supposed to do. They're just chugging right along. I mean, you look at some of these scores. The game last night, 6-1. You could argue that's probably one of the most impressive wins early on this season, all the way around. I know you were been writing about the way Snitker handled everything last night, which is a big part of it. But I mean, the bats are working and the pitching is doing its thing. I mean, Atlanta, like I said, they're just kind of rolling right now.
Yeah, like that's a really close game in the ninth inning, and what worked out big for Atlanta was how they were able to get to Josh Hader. He pitched on Friday. He had pitched on Sunday. I believe it was Sunday. It wasn't much, but pitched like a couple pitches on Sunday. And then he takes 22 pitches last night to get one out, gives up four runs. And so the big thing here is Houston, and in my mind, made a mistake by signing Josh Hader. So $95 million for him. And yes, he was one of the best closers in baseball last year. I'm not ignoring that. But they lost, I believe it was 207 combined innings from relievers who all left in free agency. And rather than spending that $95 million to get three middle relievers or, you know, two back-end guys and two middle, whatever it was, they instead paid Hader. And now that he's probably out for the series because he's thrown, I think it's 40-something pitches in the last 5 days, and he's thrown almost 30 in the last three. That's kind of a red flag to not, you know, to have a day or two off.
Right.
You're in a situation where Atlanta was able to save the pen, and I'll get into that in a second with what's Snit good, but Hader is already shot. And so now Houston has a starter tonight in Hunter Brown, who went, I believe it was two-thirds of an inning against Kansas City last week. You've already used some of your best high-leverage relievers, including Hader, and you could potentially have to cover additional innings tonight. Like, they called up Forrest Whitley because they needed a healthy arm in the bullpen. So Atlanta's got the advantage with the bullpen matchups. They've got the advantage with the rotation. I mean, you've got Ronaldo Lopez and Max Fried. Doesn't really matter who they have. You're going to have the advantage there.
Right.
And so, like, Atlanta's set up pretty well to hopefully get a series sweep here.
For guys like you and me, and for a lot of our listeners that are just baseball guys that really enjoy and appreciate the game and the way people play it and how it's coached and how it's managed, last night was a masterpiece for the manager, Brian Snitker, for the Atlanta Braves. And it's something that you have been critiquing a little bit, but last night he really stepped up and showed why he's a World Series champion as a manager in Atlanta.
Yeah, I mean, one of the big criticisms of Brian Snitker in the past has been he waits too long to make the pitching change. And I think it was Sunday was a good example of that, where Dylan Lee is up and ready to go, but he lets Charlie Morton hang out there a little bit too long. Mm-hmm. They end up, I think they score four runs against off of Morton, something like that. But last night, you've got prospect Darius Vines out there. He goes 4 2/3 innings. They make the switch to lefty Aaron Bummer to face Yordan Alvarez. He gets the out. They get out of the inning, no runs score. He makes the change to Pierce Johnson with one on and one out in the sixth, who is a incredibly heavy breaking ball guy. It's a vertical breaking curveball, gets a ton of ground balls. He gets the double play ball. Now, they don't convert the double play, but the decision was right because they got the play they were looking for. He goes to A.J. Minter with two outs in the seventh. So Johnson did an inning and two-thirds. Mm-hmm. He goes to Minter with two outs in the seventh to face Yordan again. Yordan, I believe, pops out. Minter takes the entire eighth. Atlanta comes around. They score those four runs off of Josh Hader. No longer a save situation. So they sit down Raisel Iglesias, who hadn't pitched in, I think, 2 days before this, go to Jesse Chavez in the ninth. So now, because you made the changes at the right time, you avoided runs going on the board, you let those guys go a little bit longer, meaning they're probably down for today, but you saved some other big pieces, and your closer's still available. So you have Joe Jimenez, you have Raisel Iglesias, you know, you have Tyler Matzek, who's still working his way back. You have plenty of bullpen options. Like, it was probably the best in-game single job that Snitker's done outside of that 2021 NLCS where he went to Tyler Matzek at the right time and Matzek just shut down the Dodgers.
Wow.
It was... I don't think we, like, if we criticize Snitker for the bad decisions, we have to give credit to him for pulling all of those at the exact right time last night.
Sure. I mean, I think that's fair. And, you know, it's so early on this season, right? It's so early. We're in the middle of April, and you don't want to put so much pressure on one individual series. But when you go to the other side and you're playing in the other conference and you're on the road at a team like Houston, an organization like Houston, I mean, this is a big series for the Braves early on, and to get game one of the series, like you mentioned, now you've got your relievers, you've got your closers, you have all those guys tonight when the Braves play at Houston, where you can go and get a series win, because you can have all of that to your advantage rather than now you're playing from behind the chains, to use a football term, right? You're playing from behind, but instead now you kind of take control of this series, and that's something you hope catches on for many more series to come.
Yeah, and it shows, I think, a little bit of growth of, we're going to evaluate this or make our strategic decisions not just to win this game, but to win the series.
Exactly.
And that's not necessarily something you've seen in the past from Snitker. Even as far as who starts what days, Darius Fiennes was taking the place of Spencer Strider. He can't replace him. Nobody can replace Spencer Strider, but he took that rotation spot. And he was lined up to start on Wednesday. And instead, they moved him to Monday because if he falters, which the guy who had been in that spot before, Alan Winans, did falter against the Mets, if Vines falters, you still have two reliable guys behind him to go out and win the series. Mm-hmm. It's a medium-term view of baseball, and it's how can we make sure we win this series? He pulled the right moves last night. I do think we should acknowledge having four lefties in your bullpen versus just one like you had for a lot last year is part of that. But it was, how can we win this game and still be in a good position to win the series? And it's an evolution of the thinking of Brian Snitker we haven't really seen. And I need to flesh this out. I've realized as I talked this, I need to flesh this out into a longer article that I'm probably going to post tomorrow morning now. Because
you're just brainstorming. That's all you're
talking
doing.
Talking this out, I'm like, you know, I think I need to highlight this a little bit more, how significant this is, because it's not really something we've seen in the past from mm-hmm. the Braves and from a lot of managers in baseball, really. A lot of managers still work on a game-by-game basis.
Which, I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, and that may be the old school way of thinking of, okay, yeah. Today's Tuesday. We're playing a game on Tuesday. We're going to win the game on Tuesday. We'll worry about the game on Wednesday, but winning games is important, but winning series is more important because that means you're winning multiple games. And again, mm-hmm. I don't know if that's just a different in thinking and how I am, but if I were to be, which I'll never be in this spot, but if I were a manager of a baseball team, it's like, okay, we got a three-game series against Houston. How can we strategize and game plan this to win the series on the road? And it's never going to go as perfectly scripted as you go into it, but it's like going into a playoff series. Like, you go in to win the series. You don't go in to win just game one and hope the rest of it works out.
Yeah, and the most that we really would see going forward would be, okay, these relievers are not going to be available today because they pitched yesterday and we want to have them tomorrow. And I think this is a little bit bigger. Something else, too, that I've noticed, and I'm still doing some of the work on the numbers and things like this, but I've noticed that throwing some of your high leverage relievers in situations where you don't need to, like the game script doesn't say you have to stop them from scoring, use your best guy here, but you want to get a guy some work, so you throw him out there in the eighth or the ninth.
Mm-hmm.
I've some of the preliminary stuff I've done here. It is a bad decision because
there are consequences.
Consequences later in the series. Those hitters will do better against those relievers because you let them throw earlier in the series when you didn't need to. And
so
I think this is a good example of you could have thrown your closer. He hasn't thrown in a couple days. You could use him Monday and still use him on Tuesday or Wednesday. But saving him means that they haven't seen him and he will be more effective. Like, again, the numbers that I've been looking at in the spreadsheets, he will be more effective because they did not see him on Monday when they do use him.
I love baseball, man. It's so unique in that instance. You know, we've been talking so much basketball over the last 4 months because that's the season we've been in, right? But it's like, we have five guys and we have two guys on the bench, and you know what we do and you know how we're going to play, so here it is. Can you stop it? Baseball is like, yeah, well, we have this guy, but you haven't seen him because we decided not to throw him when we could, mm-hmm. and now we're going to take it. I mean, it's just, it's so crazy, and I almost compare this to to like going against the book in blackjack, right? If you're into that sort of thing, and it's like, okay, the book says to hit on this or stay on this. It's like, yeah, well, I want to see what this does. And then sometimes it pays off and sometimes it doesn't. And it could screw over other people at the table.
It also kind of feels like when you have, and we see this in college football sometimes, we see it in the NFL sometimes, when you face a team in the regular season and then you turn around and you see them in the postseason as well.
Right.
About like, hey, if you emptied the playbook to beat them in the first game, well, they've seen all of your tricks now. And so it's not going to be as effective. You try to run this, you know, this pattern, you try to do this thing in the rematch, not going to be as effective. And this is that in a much smaller scale, but I think potentially a much more impactful scale here.
Yeah.
And it's just like, we've never really talked a lot about the impact of, like, everybody who is a big baseball guy knows, or big baseball person, sorry, knows that the third time through the order, hitters are much more likely to perform off a starter. We haven't talked about the second or third time you see a reliever in a series. And I think in the postseason, this ends up being a big deal because it's a 7-game series or a 5-game series. But in the regular season, it's 2 or 3 games. We've never really talked about it. But I'm excited to get this kind of finished up so I can publish this and kind of say, hey, here is this thing that I've figured out. And I'm sure MLB teams know this already, right? Like, they're always way ahead of us. But in the public space, there's not a lot of talk about seeing relievers multiple times in multiple days. And I'm excited to get this finally finished up and published.
As long as you credit ESPN 106.7, since that's where you brainstormed and put all your thoughts out into the world, as long as you give us credit, I'm cool with it.
It's like, hey, Saber, here is this thing I did. Co-author on this paper is going to be ESPN 106.7, Jacob Goins.
Yep, that's it. Hey, as long as I get that check in the mail at the end of the month, that's all I care about.
Wait, I'm supposed to get paid for this?
You're getting paid. 334-321-1390, that's the number. Come on in, talk a little baseball. We got to talk big injury news for the Atlanta Braves when we come back, plus the biggest storylines around Major League Baseball. Plus, we'll talk Auburn baseball as well with Lindsey Crosby joining us for all of hour number one here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Back inside the studio here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. We are joined for the entire first hour here in the studio by Lindsey Crosby, who is writing for at least 15, maybe 20 different outlets at this point. BravesToday.com, writing for the Marlins as well for the Sports Illustrated site there. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, your Auburn Daily coverage, man. You're killing it and doing a fantastic job. You're podcasting, you're going to games, you're covering games. I mean, I don't know when you sleep or see your wife and kids, but, you know, you're living the dream.
The Braves play a day game on Wednesday, so I think we have a date night scheduled Wednesday night. But like, it's my wife takes the approach during baseball season. She's like, this is my single mom era every baseball season. And she's like, I just got to act like you're not available ever.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
And I mean, we're big calendar people. We're big, like, here's the calendar, what I'm doing.
Gotta love it. Yeah. Hey, once November's hits, then you're good until spring training starts.
She gets me November through the end of January. I'm like, this is whatever you want to schedule. It's fine. Just do it. You got these 3 months. These are all yours.
And there's really not much you can say.
Really not. It's like, hey, babe, nope.
Yep. Hey, that's how it goes, man. Happy wife, happy life. Well, you're killing it, man. Plug all that stuff one more time. Let people know. We'll let you do it again at the end as well. But just tell everybody where they can find all your written work.
Yeah. So the Atlanta Braves, BravesToday.com, the Marlins writing for SI.com, also MarlinsToday.com, and then the Auburn Tigers, AuburnDaily.com. So managing editor and chief writer for Braves, managing editor for Marlins, and then senior baseball writer for Auburn. Haven't done a ton of writing in the last couple days for Auburn, but still all around it, watching every game as many as I can be, and keeping up with the program because that's where I got my start. It's always going to be my first love.
That's right. Well, we'll talk a lot about Auburn baseball coming up in the back end of this first hour. But one more big Braves note to talk about before we get to just Major League Baseball in general. The biggest news probably of this season so far in for the Braves and around Major League Baseball is the fact that this Braves team that is looking to make another run, looking to win another World Series, they're going to have to do it without their go-to guy in Spencer Strider, who is out for the rest of the year. What can you tell us about what this injury is, kind of what the process is, because it's not your typical injury that he's dealing with, and he's not going the typical route to try to get it fixed.
Right. So Spencer Strider, we don't know the severity, but Spencer Strider had what they're calling damage to the UCL. So this is the ligament in the elbow that connects the upper and lower elbow. And the idea here is it's a very, very common injury for pitchers. It is only about 2 millimeters thick. It's not like a very big ligament, right? But he has some sort of damage, and so he needed a UCL repair. We usually think of that as Tommy John surgery. He had Tommy John surgery at Clemson in 2019, still was drafted by the Braves the fourth round in 2020. So what they did this time, it doesn't work for everybody, but what they did this time is the Braves surgeon, Dr. Keith Meister, he's out in Dallas, Texas, they did what's called the internal brace surgery for his UCL repair. So typically when you repair a UCL, you take a donor tendon, not a ligament, but a tendon, from either the forearm or the leg or a cadaver, and in essence, you drill some holes and you weave it in to replace the UCL. That's the typical repair.
Okay.
What they did instead was they do the internal brace. It's this tape-like suture that connects the upper and lower arm and provides stability in the joint. But the big difference between a standard Tommy John surgery and this is that internal brace doesn't go away. It permanently stays in the body. And so the idea is, typically when you're pitching, most of the force, because if you think about it, you have to transmit the force through your elbow to get to your hand. Most of the force is absorbed by the muscles of the arm, and what's left goes to the UCL. When you get fatigued, your mechanics screw up, that's where too much pressure is on the UCL and it tears. The internal brace being in there can help absorb some of that force going forward. So the idea is, one, it should make him less likely to tear it a second time, or tear it a third time, technically. But then also, he should be able to return to play sooner. Tommy John rehab is typically 14 to 18 months to return to competitive action. For the internal brace, it's 10 to 13, depending on the rehab. This is his second surgery. There might be some complications, but rather than being out until the end of 2025, there's a lot of optimism in the organization that he can be back before the All-Star break next year, if not even, you know, maybe April or May.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's obviously a huge blow. You can't replace Spencer Strider. He had led the league in strikeouts last year. He has the highest strikeout rate for any starting pitcher in baseball history. You can't just replace that guy. But thankfully, you won't lose him for multiple years now. He'll just be out for 24 and some portion of 2025.
That's insane. I mean, the on the medical side, which obviously I don't understand, but it is just wild that they're just going to say, you know what, let's open your arm up,
yep,
and let's put a brace in there, not on the outside. We're going to put it on the inside of your arm, and then we're going to sew it back up, and it's just going to hold it there, and it's just going to work.
It's become a really common alternative for the second surgery for a lot of guys. Shohei Ohtani's was an internal brace. Lucas Giolito, who just had his surgery, he was an internal brace. A lot of position players who tear their ACLs, they get the internal brace. And then it started to become a thing now with younger players, college athletes, and even some prep athletes. If they have to have Tommy John early, a lot of the surgeons, even if it's a standard Tommy John repair, they're also adding that internal brace to hopefully prevent those players from being re-injured. So
this is a really stupid question, but would these guys consider, to prevent them from tearing it originally, to go in and say, hey, I don't know if you could put the brace on it before it's actually torn, or I don't know how that works. Like, could you go in and do that and be like, hey, put this in here. I'm 21 years old. Put this brace in here so that way I hopefully never tear this thing. I mean,
so I've been talking to a sports medicine surgeon and trying to get more information about this and learn a lot about it.
Our TV's going nuts in the studio right now. Emergency signal stuff. Gotta love that.
Yeah. And I asked that question kind of, you know, not on the record, but like on background. Is that something that you would recommend doing? And they said the risks of doing a surgery when you don't need to, especially for something as important as that, are kind of high. So they wouldn't recommend preemptively doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's ever a reason where a pitcher would need an elbow surgery, even if it's not the typical situation where you would do a UC,
an internal brace.
Yeah.
He said, I see there's a lot of belief that we should start adding that every single time.
That's so wild,
just,
man.
Just to be safe.
Wow. Okay. That's so far over my head, man. But, I mean, you have to. You're dealing with guys that are worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Like, yeah. Spencer Strider is in that category where, I mean, he is the face of a franchise on the pitcher's mound. And, yeah, now he's going in to get this thing, and hopefully it works out for him. And hopefully the Braves can get him back. Not this year, but they're hoping before the All-Star break next year.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So we'll see how that goes, man. Talking all things baseball with Lindsey Crosby. We'll flip over to the college game. We'll talk about the Auburn Tigers and the SEC and everything else going on around the college game when we come back here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds it at the back. I'm Jacob Goetz with you on ESPN 106.7. We're joined in the studio by good friend Lindsey Crosby, writing for baseball for Braves, Marlins, and of course your Auburn Tigers. And that's where we go now. Been talking a lot of Braves, and I know it is something that pains us to talk about at times. And look, we've had a lot of great times talking Auburn baseball in this program with you, Lindsey. And here's what I said yesterday. I said, you have seasons like this in baseball. You have them in sports, but you definitely have seasons like this in baseball. And what's disappointing about Auburn's 18-17 overall record and their 2-13 conference record is Butch Thompson and company have set a much higher standard for Auburn baseball, and they have proven that year after year. So when you have a year like this, it just hurts a little bit more when you're 2-13 in conference play, you're coming off yet another sweep, and you go into a midweek game tonight against Georgia Tech that isn't all that easy.
Yeah, this is one of the hardest schedules that I have seen a team play in the first half of conference play in a long time. And like Arkansas, you went to Vanderbilt, top 10 Vanderbilt, home for number one Arkansas. When A&M came, they were number one. You go to top 5 Tennessee. Then you get Kentucky, who is, I think, number 8, but they're also leading the SEC East. Like, they're winning the SEC East right now. Like, it's a brutal schedule. But that being said, so many of these games have been close games, and almost every single one has gone against Auburn. You bring in Arkansas, and you lose the first two games by a combined 2 runs. I mean, almost every single weekend, there's been one or two games that were a run or 2 runs away from being different. A&M, the opener, was a 2-run game. The series finale was a walk-off win 10-9 in extras. I mean, Tennessee, you had 2-run rule losses. You won one against them. And then Kentucky, you have a 1-run loss in the first game. And then the third game was more competitive until the end, and it kind of just became a blowout there. And it all kind of comes back for Auburn to pitching. The pitching has struggled in a way that we have not seen in a while.
And why?
It's really inexplicable. Like,
it's a hard question. It is.
It's a really hard question because it looked like everything should have been fine. You brought back like 80% of your innings from last year, and you brought back Joseph Gonzalez, who, like, I've talked on this show and other radio shows about how this Auburn baseball team always seems to make a run late in the schedule. They did it last year, and 22 was a great example of that, and he was the catalyst for that run.
You better believe it.
Joseph Gonzalez had a stretch in the back half of conference play in 2022 where I want to say he put up like 4 quality starts and 5 outings, including a complete game shutout of Vanderbilt. Like, and to go from there to he is your midweek starter tonight with an ERA of almost 10.
Gosh.
There's
a problem.
There's a problem. Auburn has exactly one pitcher who has qualified on the ERA boards. Chase Alsop has 41 innings. He has an ERA of almost 7.5. And then outside of that, all of the rest of your guys are, with the exception of John Armstrong, everybody else is a 4 ERA or higher. Every single one of them. And I think some of this is
when you change pitching coaches, there's going to be an adjustment period. I don't know why the adjustment period is so long. And I think that this kind of comes down to one, bad luck. I mean, so many close losses. That's what it is. And we don't like to talk about luck in baseball. And I don't always say luck as in, oh, that was a bad bounce and that would have been an out and now it's a base hit and a run scored. I mean luck as in the randomness of baseball, right? Mm-hmm. Of over a certain time frame, things will even out. That was the whole concept the Oakland A's used with Moneyball. It's like over time, we will get enough of the breaks where this strategy of finding guys who can get on base will lead to runs and will lead to wins.
Mm-hmm.
But Billy Beane famously said, and I'll censor this, he's like, my crap doesn't work in the playoffs because it's such a short sample. Right. You don't have time for the luck to equalize.
Mm-hmm.
And a college baseball conference schedule is not really long enough for Auburn's luck to equalize. They've had some poor performances, they've had some poor luck, and they've had a larger than expected adjustment period with a new pitching coach who is calling the pitches from the dugout, whereas Auburn's always called the pitches on the field.
How much of that, because that's been a big part of this, mm-hmm. and that's been something a lot of fans have brought up on this program and on websites and on social media and everything. I mean, how much of that do you think really plays into the struggles that Auburn has had pitching wise, calling pitches from the bull or from the dugout versus just maybe the staff that Auburn's trying to use?
So I guess what's up front, what's established that Auburn doing that, Auburn calling pitches from the catcher and the pitcher on the field in college baseball is rare. So up until just this spring, I did 2 years as the host of Locked On MLB Prospects. Mm-hmm. We talked a lot about minor league baseball. We talked to college coaches about their prospects, things like that. And one of the biggest talking points about catchers that you drafted was that even college catchers now did not understand game calling because the games were called from the dugout. And Butch Thompson had always kind of been with Tim Hudson and with Darren Schoenrock. They had always kind of still left that with the catchers and the pitchers. And Butch's explanation to the media, to us, was that if they make a mistake, I want them to be able to turn to you when you ask them about it and explain what happened. And the joke here is that we never really, like at a loss, we talked to Butch and that's about it. So we never really got those players. But there is a belief that by letting the catchers and the pitchers call the game together, you're better able to understand what the pitcher is comfortable with and what they're doing well and not doing well in the game. Now, the flip side of this, college coaches will tell you, like, we can see what they're doing well and not doing well from the dugout, and they still can shake off. Like, they Auburn, just like every other team, will, in the PitchCom device, which is the little, you know, it has the speaker in the helmet of both the pitcher and the catcher,
mm-hmm.
it programs and says what you're supposed to do. But it also has fake shake, and you're supposed to shake like you're shaking off a pitch to throw off any sort of patterns and rhythms and all of that stuff. And sometimes they'll shake for real. They're allowed to shake off. But it's a different dynamic. It takes some getting used to. And I do think that just the baseball purist in me, there is something to the guy who's catching the pitches probably understands the best what the pitches are doing, what the pitcher is able to do versus what he's trying to do, and what the hitter is prepared and not prepared to face that day. You could have a scouting report all you want, but if the dude wakes up and his shoulder is sore, maybe he can't cover that slider down and away. Maybe he can't catch up to the inside fastball. And so, like philosophy-wise, I want the pitcher and catcher to call their game versus from the dugout, but I understand why a college coach would want to do that from the dugout because they have the written scouting reports in front of them.
Well, I'll say that because, and I'll agree with that because from a catcher and pitcher standpoint, and if you're calling pitches and trying to call the game from the dugout, right? And you brought up a really good point. Okay, so-and-so's, you know, shoulder is sore from the relief last night or whatever. And the pitching coach says, all right, slider, down and away. Okay, well, what if he can't get that? What if he can't deliver that pitch? The coach may not fully know that, like the catcher would, or may not have picked up on that as the game or as the outing has gone on, like the catcher is, because catchers know their pitchers better than anybody. That's their job. That's part of what makes a catcher so important to the game of baseball, one if not the most important position on the defense.
Yeah, and the answer to that should be the pitcher should be shaking off in that situation, but not every player is comfortable doing that, depending on the relationship they have with the pitching coach and all of that. And
you're also dealing with a human. You're not dealing with a robot.
Exactly. He may not, you know, but the thing that I keep thinking about as well is so often last year in that second half run Auburn made, and even the year before that, the big change that one of the big changes that Butch Thompson talks about in that, I keep going back to that 22 season, but keeps talking about is when they installed Nate LaRue as the full-time catcher. And one, his defense, very good. He'd pitched, his arm was great, but the game calling, they specifically talked about he was so good at helping guys establish the pitch that was working best that day and knowing what to call for every guy. Now, I understand you switch catchers this year. You've got Ike Irish. You also have Carter Wright and Cole Strickland. I understand you're kind of resetting that. And Nate LaRue was a gifted catcher to me, so you can't just replace him outright. But I do think there is something to his installation coinciding with a great run. His installation into the lineup coincided with a great run by this Auburn team. And I think in retrospect, maybe making such an extreme change right away wasn't the best decision, but I'll also acknowledge it's hard to be around for a year and then make that change, right? Especially when you go into the year, none of the three catchers have been the full-time catcher at Auburn. Ike Irish DH'd almost every game last year. And so there was going to be some transition behind the plate, and I can see the argument of it's easier to make that transition by taking the responsibilities of pitch-by-pitch game calling off of their plate. I can see that argument. I just don't, philosophy-wise, I don't necessarily love the decision to do that. I don't think we'll ever hear anything otherwise from the coaching staff, but that's my observation of one of the big changes that I've seen. There's a lot that goes into this performance from this team, but that's something that I noticed that's kind of bothered me for a little while.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. And look, we could sit here for the next hour and talk about the pitching concerns and the pitching problems and what we think it is and what it could be and how to fix it. On the other side of things, you are seeing the offense, which was going to be a strength of this team. We know there's power in this lineup up and down, and unfortunately you've had some injury problems in there with Bobby Pierce and Ike Irish. I mean, two of your biggest hitters in this lineup have had major injury problems, which that doesn't help your offense when two of your biggest bats are not playing.
Yeah. The big thing here, it kind of, to me, is you have just enough positions where there was a little bit of question where you end up having to rotate guys. You haven't always locked down certain roles or locked down certain positions. And I'm thinking about your non-first base, non-shortstop infield spots. Your second base and third base, you've rotated a lot of guys through there. Eric Guevara came back from ACL tear, the true freshman. He was expected to probably hold down one of those spots entering the year before he tore his ACL. Derek Fabian struggled a little bit at the plate offensively. Javon Hernandez, same thing. I want to say here, Hernandez is batting below 190. Fabian's batting low 230s maybe. And you were expecting one of them to step up and be a little bit better offensively there. And so a little bit of instability, the outfield, you've kind of rotated around some of the spots. Some of that was injury, Bobby Pierce's injury and things like that. And some of that was you didn't quite think that like Cade Bellew was ready for a full-time role when the season started. You've seen him playing more recently. He's made like 8 starts now. Has looked pretty good from a power perspective. Hit a massive home run. I think it was Friday or Saturday. One of the longest I've seen at Plainsman Park in a while. But it's just you've had enough movement and changes in the lineup, and then you've had some slow starts to some guys. Chris Stanfield's a guy that I had incredibly high hopes for. He's a phenomenal player, but he hasn't necessarily been able to get the power production into games and the consistent on-base ability like we were expecting. And so rather than him being able to lead off or bat second behind Cooper Weiss and be a stolen base threat and a base pass threat, he's been a little bit lower in the order. You've had some slow starts. You've had some injuries. And because of all of that, it just hasn't really gelled, right? It's the story for these Auburn teams. They always go on a run when they figure out the role for the guy. Like, they figure out who goes in what roles.
When everybody fits in their spot, then everything clicks and the team takes off.
And because of the injuries, because of different things, you haven't really had that offensively like you typically do by this point in a conference schedule. And so now that Guevara's back, and starting almost every game now, I expect him to continue to get better. I wonder if his addition to the lineup will kind of solidify who's going to be in that other spot, or we're going to keep rotating through there.
One more thing before we get to break, and we'll talk about the game coming up tonight, the weekend series this weekend in Stark, Vegas, taking on Mississippi State. Saturday can't happen, Lindsey. What happened with this Auburn team on Saturday against Kentucky? You're up 7-0 on a top 10 team in the country in the first three innings. I know there's still a lot of baseball to play after that, but up 7-0 in an SEC game where you desperately needed a win, you cannot let that team come back, hang 13 runs on you, and get beat by 5 in your home ballpark. That just can't happen.
And if you look, every single run came from either a home run or an extra base hit. And something that I've heard now for 3 years from Butch Thompson, extra base hits are thrown. They're not hit. It's the pitcher. And it kind of comes back to, it sounds dumb, right? But it kind of comes back to your locations. And specifically, Auburn pitchers have been extraordinarily good at missing middle versus missing outside. And it's a little bit of bad luck, right? That would normalize over the course of a full year. But it comes back to pitching, and it comes back to, we've had enough instability in our rotation, we've had to move guys around. We've had to put Tanner Bowman into a starting role. We've had to overuse John Armstrong in one outing, and then he's down for the rest of the weekend because we don't trust the rest of the pen to hold a lead that we can give him. And so it all kind of comes back to pitching. The offense didn't help, right? They were quiet, but it all came back to every single one of those was a home run or a double.
Auburn baseball has Georgia Tech tonight, then they have Mississippi State coming up this weekend. We'll talk about those games, wrap up our conversation with Lindsey Crosby, and wrap up hour number one, all coming up here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We've been joined by Lindsey Crosby for all of it. It's been great to get him back in the studio long term, and hoping to do this on a consistent basis now with baseball season being the prime sport, with football, basketball out of the way. I know transfer portal stuff's going crazy, but baseball is king right now in terms of games being played. And so before we talk a little bit more about Auburn, plug everything you got going one more time. You're writing all over the place. You got podcasts every day. I mean, tell people where they can find you each and every day.
So I am covering the game of baseball every way I possibly can. BravesToday.com is my home base for everything, right? But we've also got MarlinsToday.com covering the Miami Marlins, Auburn Daily. I'm appearing, like you said, on podcasts and radio just about every single day, whether it's on the Braves Today YouTube channel or it's shows like this one.
Yeah, you guys do a great job at Braves Today, you and Ben Taylor from News Talk WANI. So you guys doing a wonderful job. Auburn baseball playing tonight against Georgia Tech, a team that we were talking about during the break. This is not a bad Georgia Tech team. They've got 22 overall wins. They're 7-8, so 7-8 in conference play. So right there, hovering around 500 in the ACC. You can catch that game tonight on Wings 94.3. Pregame begins at 5:45. First pitch set for 6:00, and then Auburn taking on Mississippi State this weekend, which they're not ranked, but don't be fooled. It's still Mississippi State, and it's still on the road in Starkville. So it doesn't really get any easier for this Auburn team, Lindsey.
No, and like, okay, Georgia Tech's had a weird season, right? Like, looking at conference play, they sweep NC State, they get swept by North Carolina, they get swept by Boston College, they beat Pittsburgh, they beat Virginia Tech. It's been a weird year. But the thing that Georgia Tech feels like that they always can do, that they always have, is they always have offense. And you kind of look at what they're doing. I mean, they don't have a lot of home run threats, which is good for Auburn, right? They have freshman Drew Burris, who's hit 15 home runs. Short king. He's like 5'7", 5'8". Didn't get drafted because of that. But they just, they are, I'm going to say pesky. Like, they continuously get base hits.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the kind of thing where an inning can quickly spiral out of control. And so Auburn's pitchers have to be really good at shutting down a rally tonight. And then this weekend, Starkville, not like you said, not an easy place to play, right? They are 7-8 in conference. They are fighting for a tournament spot just like we are, and they are ahead of us in the standings right now.
By a lot.
And when you kind of look at, you know, they go, they take 2 out of 3 from LSU. Like, they, I mean, they've played, they took 1 out of 3 in College Station against A&M. They have gone out there, they took 1 out of 3 from Florida. They've handled some big pitchers, and they've been able to get their runs, and they've been able to shut down some good offenses. And so you're in a situation of, it is going to be tough, and you've got to go over there. You have to win at least 2 games, if not sweep, if you want to keep your SEC tournament hopes alive.
Oh, that's just not, that's not where you want to be, man. That's not where you want to be with Mississippi State, LSU, Ole Miss, Missouri, and Alabama on the remaining schedule.
Yeah, it's easier than the first half, but still. Watch for their ambidextrous pitcher, though, this weekend. Gerangelo Sintahe.
Uh-huh.
He pitches both left and right hands. It's tons of fun to watch.
Oh, looking forward to it, man. Lindsay, we always appreciate you and have a great time, man. It's always fun talking baseball. There's so many things going on between the Braves, Major Leagues, and college and Auburn, man. We appreciate your time as always.
Thanks for having me.
Lindsay Crosby, check him out. BravesToday.com and Auburn Daily as well. Plus, all sorts of things in the world of baseball. That was in this whole first hour. We've got some basketball news that we need to talk about coming up in hour number two. An Auburn transfer portal player visiting a school in the SEC. How about just across the state? We'll talk about that coming up in hour number two. Plus, Daryl Daprich will join us as well. Stay tuned. Hour number two coming up.
Is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7. Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, here on ESPN 106.7. If you missed any of hour number one, man, it was, we got to come up, we used to call it a baseball power hour on Tuesdays, and maybe we'll go back to that. Maybe we'll come up with something different. But Lindsay Crosby joined us for all of hour number one from Braves Today, Auburn Daily, Marlins Today. I mean, the guy's doing it all when it comes to baseball coverage. And so he joined us in the first hour talking Atlanta Braves, talking Major League Baseball, and talked a lot of Auburn baseball as well, something I know a ton of you are really interested and engaged in right now, as the Tigers struggling to get the train back on the tracks. They've got Georgia Tech tonight. They've got Mississippi State this weekend. So if you're looking for your baseball fix, be sure you go back and listen to the podcast later on today. You can find it at ESPNAU.com or just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. So that was in the first hour. Here's what's coming up in hour number two. It's Tuesday, which means Double D, Daryl Daprich, will be with us coming up in about 15 minutes. He'll join us. We'll talk all things Auburn athletics. Football transfer portal, basketball transfer portal. We'll get his thoughts on baseball as well. So really excited to have Daryl Daprich joining us coming up at 3:15, talking all things Auburn athletics. Phone lines are open for about 10 minutes or so. If you want to come in and join us, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. And the topic that I've got to talk about, have to, the news that came out about 30 minutes before we went on the air. And this is wild. And this is pretty much the definition and the prime example of the transfer portal today. and the fact that kids will go anywhere and do anything, and I'm not talking bad about them. I'm not. I'm really not. But it's just such a different world that we live in. We know that Auburn basketball and Bruce Pearl lost three guards to the transfer portal, KD Johnson, Trey Donaldson, and Aiden Holloway. One of those guys is a five-star freshman who was a McDonald's All-American. He's going to be a sophomore this coming year. He had super high expectations and just never did live up to them. And he entered the transfer portal. He's a really good player, and he could go and play at a lot of places. And it was reported today that coming up on Thursday, this young man will be taking a visit to the University of Alabama. Aiden Holloway will be taking an official visit to Alabama on Thursday to visit Nate Oates in the Alabama basketball program. How about that? How does that make you feel as an Auburn basketball fan? Have you seen this news yet? And if I'm breaking that to you on this for the first time this afternoon, I apologize. It had to be me to do it. But Aiden Holloway taking a visit to Alabama, which he has every right to do. Has every right to do. You can transfer in the conference. It doesn't matter anymore, right? Those rules are gone. You can do whatever you want. And, man, it really is just it's a crazy, crazy time in college athletics. Because for years, it was like, man, there's no way you can go from your rival school to your rival school, right? You can't go from Alabama to Auburn. You can't go from Georgia to Florida. You can't go from Ohio State to Michigan. You can't do that. That's wrong. That is forbidden. That is, you know what I'm saying? Whatever word you want to put in there, that's probably not clean for radio. But now, in the transfer portal and NIL world, none of that really matters. And I'll say this too, it's not as frowned upon as it used to be. Like, I'm sure most of you right now, Auburn fans, are not excited and not happy learning that Aiden Holloway is taking a visit to Alabama. No, he is not committed. No, he's not signed. None of that has become, there's none of that. But he is taking a visit because two things. One, he's interested in Alabama. And more importantly, Alabama is interested in him. And that's something that Auburn fans just have to accept. And I've been telling you, I told you when he committed, or when he left the transfer portal, apologies, when he entered and decided to leave Auburn, I've been telling you, he's going to go to some school, and he's going to light it up. I'm telling you, it's going to happen. He's going to go somewhere, he's going to fit in some system, he's going to find his shot, and he's going to become the superstar we all wanted him to be here on the Plains. You watch. I'm just telling you. And now, to back that up, he's taking a visit to Alabama, the place that lets people shoot threes more than any other program in the country. And Nate Oates has made some really average players really good there and has made excellent shooters over there and three-point guys that are now playing in the NBA. That's what Nate Oates has done in his short time. You're telling me, take the orange and blue glasses off, take a biasy out of this for a second. You're telling me you don't think Nate Oates could make Aiden Holloway a really good player? I think he could. I really do. And that should scare you if you're an Auburn fan. Do you really want to see the potential of Aiden Holloway in the Crimson and White playing at Tuscaloosa and have to see him twice in a year? Possibly three if you play him in the SEC tournament? I don't think so. I don't think so. And I'm not saying that he never should have left Auburn, that he didn't need to leave. I didn't want to see him leave, but a lot of you did. And I think it just didn't work out here, which is unfortunate. But the fact is, he's taking a visit to Alabama, which means there's a potential that the starting point guard next year at Tuscaloosa could be named Aiden Holloway. And it's a crazy turn of events. Crazy world. And it is what it is. Like, it's not even new. It's not even like, wow, that's shocking. That's surprising. It's really not. Like, it's really, really not. It's wild, man. It really is. And we'll see what happens. That visit's coming up on Thursday. Aiden Holloway taking a visit to Tuscaloosa in Alabama. Intern Allen, what you got?
Yeah, kind of like what you're talking about, Jacob. It is a new era. You had Antonio Kite come over from Alabama to play, and he's going to be playing for Auburn this fall in football. So,
good point.
I mean, it's just a new era with this transfer portal, and Aiden Holloway is definitely making his presence known in the transfer portal, taking the visit to Alabama.
Well, you had ETN, who went from Florida to Georgia, right? I mean,
these unheard-of moves are now becoming more common.
Which, in the rivalry lines don't really exist anymore when it comes to playing time and, above all, money, right? The NIL money. Like, and look, and I think there's something to be said, too, and I don't want to sound too above my age here, but it seems like, too, there's no... With these 18, 19, 20-year-olds, they're not as loyal and bought into their specific program as much as they used to be. There's not as much school program pride, if that makes any sense. Like, you're not like, well, I played at Auburn, so I would never go to play for Alabama. I could go to Stanford, but I'm not going to play for Alabama or Georgia.
Yeah, and you also got Rylan Griffin after the Final Four game against UConn, and they asked him about just the future of the Alabama basketball program, and he said Nate Oates is one of the best in the game. He's going to win a national championship, and determining on how you look at that, Alabama fans obviously see that as a heck yeah, he's coming back, he's going to help build this thing, we're going to get back to that Final Four, we're going to win a championship here at Alabama, and then less than a week later, he hops in the transfer portal.
Yeah.
So, these kids are going to go get their opportunity, and they're going to try to maximize their value the best that they can. And more than likely, we're going to probably see Rylan Griffin land at a pretty big program pretty soon.
Which, it goes back to the argument, too, that a lot of people have been talking about, where, oh, kids don't have any more loyalty nowadays, blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? Coaches say they have loyalty until a bigger job comes along. Look at all the coaching changes we've been talking about the last 2 weeks. Calipari, gone. Mark Pope, gone, right? Those guys have all left. They've taken bigger, better jobs. Like, when the opportunity comes and the next step and the next door opens, most of these guys, players, coaches, administrators, they're going to take the next step. They're going to take the jump, and it's not about anybody else at that point.
Yeah, and the coaches, they did it for so long, and now that the players are starting to do it.
Now it's wrong.
Correct. That's right. So it's kind of a double standard there, but for the longest time, the coaches were able to do it. The players are now starting to do it, and it's becoming the norm because – I mean, even when the portal opens, it's not just basketball it's all sports. Mm-hmm. You're like, why would they leave? After such a great freshman season or whatever it is, they just had a breakout season. Why would they want to leave this Power Five squad? I mean, you would think that they're already at the highest level, but it's wild, man. It's the new era.
It is. It's the new era, and with all of these athletes and most coaches, and look, it's human nature to want more. You want more. You want to see, okay, I've done this, but can I do it even better? Can I do it somewhere bigger? Can I do it with more fans and more money and more playing time or more exposure or more recruiting assets or whatever the case may be, coach or player? And that's just how the game is played. That's how college sports are rolling right now. I'm not saying I like it because I don't. I don't like it. I hate that this is all happening, but it ain't going anywhere, and it's only going to get worse. And if you are trying to deny that and saying that it's not, then I don't know what to tell you because it's not getting any better. I promise you that. Money's not going anywhere. The portal's not slowing down anytime soon.
And I will say, just as a sports fan in general and the reporters and with storylines and everything, ETN, now at Georgia – potentially Aiden Holloway at Alabama. I mean, it attracts so many more viewers.
Oh, the headlines are incredible.
The headlines are endless when you have moves like this as well, because could you imagine Aiden Holloway in the crimson and white back in Neville Arena?
Goodness. I mean, just the hate that he's gotten on social media already today, which is ridiculous if you ask me. That's blasphemy that he's getting blasted on social media.
There's been no ink to paper about anything. Just the idea has caused an absolute stir on social media and in the sports world.
Welcome to sports media, man. And I can't deny, we take advantage of it. That's what Sports Talk Radio is all about, man. It's about things just like this. Aiden Holloway taking a visit to Alabama, Tuscaloosa on Thursday. The Auburn transfer portal guard. Will he end up playing for Nate Oates? Will he be the starting point guard for the Crimson Tide? That's a long way away, but you just never know.
We'll take our first break here in hour number two. When we come back, Double D, Daryl Dappertz joins us. We'll talk all things Auburn Athletics after this on ESPN 106.7.
The line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Let's get to the phone lines here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, not for a listener, but for a guest. He's with us every single Tuesday. Double D, Daryl Dappertz, how are you, brother? Great to hear from you once again.
Man, I am doing well, but before we get started, I think congratulations are in order to you, my friend. Much deserved, winning an Abby Award. And I don't know how much your listeners know that, but I wanted to bring that to your their attention and just let you know how well-deserved it was and how excited I am for you. That's a great and tremendous honor.
Well, thank you, Daryl. I appreciate that, man. And it's been, what, about a week and a half or so now, and it still doesn't feel 100% real, but it was something I was very, very excited about, very proud of, and it's folks like you that are in my corner that support me every single day, that and I have to thank you guys, so thank you very much for that.
Well, I'm proud of you, and I don't mean that in a condescending way, but it's funny. I must be so behind on my socials that it appeared on my timeline a few days ago. And I'm like, what the heck? How did I not hear about this? And we've talked a couple times, so that makes sense. And it was a week and a half ago, but new to me. And so, again, congratulations. Have it polished. Keep it spit-shined and put it where you can look at it proudly.
Yes, sir. Will do. I will definitely do that. And I appreciate you coming on and saying the kind words. And so as we get going here, Daryl, I mean, there's so much to talk about. It's portal season, right? It's portal season. That's really where you've got to start the whole conversation. And I want to start on the basketball side of things, where you've got Auburn has three players in the portal, guard-wise. Auburn is looking to bring some guys in through the portal. They've already done that. We'll talk about him in just a second. But, man, the transfer portal is, and we knew it was going to be this way in basketball, football, and in every sport, Daryl. I mean, it's just, it's out of control.
I think one of the things that I'm really starting to hate it, to be honest with you, and I know that for someone like yourself and me that cover athletics and college athletics and talk about it for a living and do things, it's supposed to be a very exciting time. And it has become just, it's created a monster. And I just look at the thing, like the Proctor kid from Iowa that goes from Alabama to Iowa. Now he's going back. It's just, it's out of control, in my opinion. I'm not trying to sound like an old curmudgeon. But the second part of it that I think they need to really get a better grasp on is let's quit overlapping sports. I mean, it's bad enough that the spring portal for football hits today, but we're still in the middle of basketball portal season. The window hasn't closed. So, you know, find a way to kind of spread it out a little bit, maybe make it a little bit less of a window to jump in, to give these coaches a little more time to manage their rosters. I think they're going to have to put some sort of restrictions in place because it's becoming the wild, wild west. And again, I understand, like, you know, it's kind of like free agency. But, yeah, from a basketball standpoint, you know, we're in the middle of it, and there is a ton of kids that unfortunately jumped to the portal and are not going to have a landing place. And, you know, and then you talk about these high school kids that are coming out of high school and the JUCO. I mean, it used to be that if you wanted a quick fix in college basketball and you needed to upgrade a particular position, you'd go to the JUCO ranks. We saw that with Chad Baker Mazzara for Auburn. And we'll talk about that in a second from a point guard option. But now, Jacob, the JUCOs are becoming just a thing of the past. I mean, it, because of the transfer portal, and it's harder for high school kids, recruits, to find landing places. So I sure hope there's some sort of reform. I don't think I'm against the transfer portal, but I would want some restrictions, you know, how many times you can get in it if you're going from a conference school to another. Just some things to kind of a little bit more common sense-wise.
Well, the problem is they had restrictions and they started to do that, and then they lifted everything because some, you know, people would get upset and get mad, and there'd be a rare instance here and there, and then it was just like, you know what? They just said, to heck with this, and you can just transfer as many times as you want, wherever you want, no matter how many times or who you are. I mean, it's just, it's crazy. And you brought up something that's really interesting to me, Daryl. We don't talk enough about the kids that enter the portal and don't end up having anywhere to go because anything they try to do would be a demotion, and some kids don't want to do that.
Well, then they're screwed if they can't go back to their previous school, which is now recruited on top of them and went out and replaced them. Then you're done. And,
yeah.
And again, look, it's very simple to me. I mean, I think they could put some. They had these rules in place that seemed to be common sense rules about transferring within the conference, hardship transfers, transfer more than once. And the NCAA all of a sudden got scared. I've never seen an organization be so, you know, hard and difficult, think that they are, you know, just the absolute thug and bully of college sports, go to marshmallow pie that quick. They are so afraid of the word lawsuit that they have softened. I mean, I remember when there was a kid maybe 6 or 7 years ago that wanted to transfer to a school to be closer to his mom, who was dying of cancer, offensive tackle. And the NCAA said, no, you can't. That's not a hardship waiver, and would have made him sit out a year. And then just 3 years later, Justin Fields throws up lawsuit, discriminatory, you know, accusations about what happened to him at a ball game in Georgia, which was horrible, absolutely horrific at a baseball game, but says, I got to get out of here for my mental health. And they say, okay, absolutely. You can go to Ohio State. You know, it's a completely, I don't know. It's really, there's no structure. There's no pattern. And I really want to see them. You make a good point. They just don't, they had some rules and then they backed off. They got scared. And I just don't think, I think that if we were in a day and age of the 80s and 90s when a lot of these colleges got hit with sanctions, lost scholarships, lost TV revenue, bowl game, being prohibited to go to bowl games. If those schools would have bowed up, got an attorney, and threatened to sue the NCAA, they would have. I believe that SMU in the 80s would have not gotten the death penalty if it happened in this day and age right now. Because number one, the NCAA looks the other way a lot on these things, and second of all, SMU would have employed some of the biggest oil men, lawyers, attorneys that Texas and Dallas could buy, and the NCAA would have backed down. And so that here's where we are with that right now. It's becoming more and more just like the Wild Wild West, and it's becoming more and more like professional sports. And I'm getting tired of it. I'm getting tired of the whole NIL thing being used as free agency to the highest bidder. Not what it was intended to be. It was intended to be name, image, and likeness, and before these kids even step on campus, they're getting offered NIL package. It was supposed to be something getting exchanged for your services and your likeness, a trade, a bartering. It's not like that. And they just literally took the lid off the can and looked the other way and said, go. And that's not neither the transfer portal or NIL was designed to be what it is in its current state right now.
That just speaks to the joke that the NCAA is, and the lack of leadership and the lack of control that they have over the schools that they govern and the players that they represent, which is really sad when you think about it, Daryl. But you said it really well right there, and there's nothing more that I could add on to that. And some of the biggest portal news here recently, we'll talk about the addition Auburn made in basketball coming up in the next segment. But how about the news that dropped a little bit earlier today? One of the portal guys that's leaving Auburn is taking a little visit up the road, Daryl, heading up north to check out Nate Oates and company in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Aiden Holloway taking an official visit to Alabama on Thursday.
You know, sometimes people think that socials and social accounts and social media and Instagram and Twitter and all that kind of stuff doesn't matter. But when people start following people, it's an indication. And Alabama basketball and Aiden Holloway followed each other on Instagram about 3 days ago, and you could just see the tea leaf. I think that Nate Oates is of the mindset that he can fix anybody when it comes to shooting and scoring and the style that he plays and the tempo that he plays. And I think, you know, Aiden Holloway being a former five-star McDonald's All-American, he probably thinks that Auburn's system was, you know, kind of suffocating for Aiden Holloway, that his minutes went down and that the offense ran through Broome and Jalen Williams. And so his offense can be guard centric and shoot it, you know, with Griffin leaving, Walters leaving, from Alabama, the portal, you know, there might be a spot. You know, it's one of those situations where it wouldn't surprise me. I know Michigan was looking at him pretty closely and then backed off for a reason. So I don't know. And, you know, maybe Nate Oates feels like he can fix them. I think the kid's still got talent. I think what I saw the first 10 games of the year shocks me how he fell off a cliff like that. I think a lot of it is off the court stuff from a psychology type standpoint and a mental aspect of how he plays the game, not mental health. I'm talking about just the way he emotionally,
just not getting down on himself.
Yeah, handles the stuff. Yeah, handles stuff on the court that happens, and you know that's got to be fixed. I mean, because you're always in a situation where if you only have confidence as a player when you play well, you're screwed because you're going to go through adversity. And there's kids that I've watched come through college, the assassins, the snipers, that'll miss four or five shots, and the crowd will get on them, whether it's home or away crowd, and they just don't stop shooting. They're like, I'm going to shoot my way out of this. They have that swag. They have that confidence. He seemed to be done or shut down after missing a few shots. He was great when it was rolling. If he hit three or four in a row, he was a completely different player. He missed two or three, and that would set the tone for the rest of the game. And you've got to have somebody that says, I don't give a crap that I've just missed two shots or three shots. I'm shooting it. I'm going to shoot my way out of it. And that's the mindset of a guy that's a sniper that can, you know, really play that position. So if you're not shooting it well, you have to facilitate as a point guard. And even that dropped off. His assist to turnover ratio, you know, started getting a little bit worse. And he's not a good rebounding guard. He doesn't come on the backside and get rebounds like guards often do to help out. He struggled a little bit defensively. That was one of the reasons why, even when he was playing good offensively early in the year, where Bruce would, you know, jerk him out of the game, is because he didn't feel like he was guarding like he should.
Yeah, well, then I think that's why people are sort of a little worried about if he does go to Alabama, because of the system that Nate Oates runs. If you're in a slump, you know how you get out of it in Tuscaloosa? You just keep shooting. And that's what maybe Aiden Holloway could do playing for Nate Oates. He's taking a visit there on Thursday. We're talking with Daryl Dapprich. He'll be with us when we come back. We'll talk about the portal additions for Bruce Pearl in Auburn basketball, plus what we could see in the portal for Auburn football as well. 30 more minutes coming up after this.
With Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. We're joined on the phone lines, as we are every Tuesday, by Double D Daryl Dapprich with us. You can catch him a couple of days a week on Locked On Auburn. He's also on News Talk WANI on Monday mornings with Ben Taylor. And, of course, the best time of the week is with me on Tuesdays here on ESPN 106.7. And, Daryl, as we continue talking the transfer portal and additions for Auburn basketball and Bruce Pearl, they picked up a big guard. They may have lost three, but they picked up a big one, and J.P. Pegues from Furman is now an Auburn Tiger.
Yeah, very highly sought after guard from the Southern Conference, and Furman averaged about 18 points a game for Furman last year as a true point guard. Really good shooter, 36% from three. Auburn had its – I did an article for Auburn Daily, dropped a basketball-centric article a couple days ago where we were kind of speculating what the roster could look like next year, and this was one of the point guard targets that Auburn was looking at. They were looking at Miles Rice, too, the kid from Washington State, but he ended up going to Indiana after Pegues committed to Auburn. I think it's a better fit for Auburn. I think Auburn will be in on a lot of high-quality point guards in the 2025 class to go alongside Pettiford, Tahad Pettiford, who plays is a hybrid, but he's more of a two. So I love the Pegues portal entry. I think that Auburn got a good one, an instant scorer. You immediately have him with Denver Jones in the backcourt. Auburn's got a very seasoned, experienced backcourt. And then Pettiford could back up the two. And I think they're looking for another backup point guard. And they may go the way that they did with Chad Baker-Mazzara last year. And that is a JUCO. You know, you look at a kid, Jacob, that maybe had, you know, had a really good junior college career, but wants to play at the next level, wants to play in the SEC, so doesn't mind coming to an Auburn and coming off the bench behind a guy like Pegues for 15 minutes a game or so because he's moving up levels. He's going from JUCO to the SEC. A mid-major, not so much. I think these mid-majors are looking to leave where they're at if they were really, really successful and just be slotted into a starting role, i.e. Pegues, what he did with Furman. So look for Auburn maybe to fill that backup point guard spot with a JUCO guy. I don't think that Denver Jones, even though he can play backup point guard, I think they have him deem him too valuable at the two. And then I think Dylan Cardwell coming back was huge.
Yes.
Now what do you do? Well, you wait on Jani Broome. And all indications are that he is going to come back to school and play at Auburn another year. Is he going to slide to the four for most of his minutes because of he's more coveted maybe in the league or professional basketball? I've heard two schools of thought on that. I heard no because the NBA, they don't know if he has a future in the NBA. So playing the four or playing the five really doesn't matter. If he stays at the five, Cardwell's your backup. I just find it hard to believe that Cardwell came back and was so excited to come back with not having the opportunity maybe to be with Broome on the floor at the same time. So what Broome does determines whether you get two big men in the portal or just one. And if they think about moving him to the four position and letting Cardwell start at the five, then you get a backup five because you've got an inherent backup four in Chaney Johnson already. Your three positions good with Chad Baker Mazzara and the Ja'Kai Howard kid and Chris Moore. And we already talked about the backcourt. So I think Auburn could have a top 10 roster if Broome comes back and they go get that backup point guard and then maybe one more transfer portal guy that's either a four or a five.
I ask you this question, and it's not to you specifically. It's just an open-ended question. Why not play Dylan Cardwell and Jani Broome at the same time if Jani comes back? I mean, it's something you and I talked about this year. It's something a lot of people were asking for. I mean, that could be a really dominant down low duo with Dylan Cardwell, who I think most people would agree needs to develop a little bit more of a finesse offensive game rather than just cleaning up and putbacks. But you put him and Jani Broome in the paint at the same time, offensively and defensively, Daryl, that's dominant, man.
It depends on what you perceive the upside or the higher value of a combo is. Is Chaney Johnson and Jani Broome on the floor at the same time more productive than Jani Broome and Dylan Cardwell on the court at the same time? Therein lies your answer. And I think if you go Broome and Cardwell, you're going big. If you're playing a lineup with three quick guards, you may not want to do that. But if you're playing a lineup where you can physically dominate in the paint, that is a lineup you may want to use. I think the second hesitation would be, I love Dylan Cardwell. He's instant energy, enthusiasm, TNT. But he does that in spurts because he gets in foul trouble so much.
Yeah.
So if you start him at the five, how long are you going to have him in a game before you're having to jerk him out, put him on the bench? Well, if that happens, you better have a really, really reliable backup five. You do if you've got Broome at the four and Chaney Johnson. So it's all about matchups. Does Bruce look at the lineup and say, the starting lineup is stronger with Chaney Johnson at the four and Broome at the five, or is it better with Broome at the four and Cardwell at the five? It remains to be seen. Could Auburn go get a five like the Wolf kid from Yale that could start over Cardwell and slide Broome to the four? Could they go get a four that could start over Chaney Johnson? I think Chaney Johnson is more apt to start than going to get a transfer to start. So it's just about who you trust as the better lineup. If you think that Cardwell can stay on the floor and be disciplined and play 25 minutes a game and not foul out, yeah, that's an option. Can he? That's the big question.
Daryl Dappert's joining us on the phone lines. You can find him on Locked On Auburn a couple of days a week on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast. Also, now I forgot you're in your journalism writing era now, Daryl. You're writing for AuburnDaily.com. I'm proud of you on that one, man. How's that going?
It's going good. I've written a couple articles, did a little A-Day recap, and then kind of wanted to do a reset on the basketball season. We took a look back, and then we did a look ahead. And then when Auburn's roster gets set, I'll go ahead and do like a roster recap and say, here's where we're at, you know. And then during the football season, I'll be doing reaction, just kind of nuggets, takeaways, that kind of thing. Takeaway articles, maybe 8-9 bullet points of things from the game and the press conference. Hugh Freeze press conference when football season starts. So every once in a while, just to stay sharp throughout the summer, I may drop one here or there. Maybe something to do with the transfer portal or evaluations of rosters and that kind of thing. But I'm enjoying it. It's fun. It helps stay a little bit connected, and it helps, you know, when you're in the press box and you're watching a game, there's a whole different take that you're when you're trying to, you know, construct an article and get something out. But I've enjoyed it, and it was just a labor of love last week to do the basketball piece. It was a little bit lengthy, but there was a lot to cover. So it'll be fun. Something I'm looking forward to is a new opportunity, a new endeavor, so to speak.
Well, we bring you on this program for two reasons. One, because you're a fantastic guy and a great friend of mine. But two, you know what you're talking about when it comes to Auburn athletics. And for you to be doing podcasting and writing and all sorts of things around that, man, you're just built for it. And you've been in this sort of business for a long, long time. And so as we look at the football side of things with the transfer portal, that opened up. You mentioned it earlier. Today's the day. Today's the day that the portal has blown open and people are leaving left and right from programs all over the country and taking visits and scheduling visits. I mean, what can you tell the people from an Auburn perspective on things that they need to know right now?
Yeah, I can give you some nuggets. I can give you some targets that Auburn has definitely made contact with in the portal. Some people that are in the portal that Auburn has reached out and expressed interest. And this is a compilation of, you know, the On3 guys, some of my sources that are close to the program, some former players that know coaches, some other things that, you know, people that cover them from a media standpoint, parents, players. I mean, there's a lot of different things that go into this list. It's kind of cumulative. So the first thing is I was very surprised to find out that Auburn had targeted a running back. There's a kid named Dallin Hayden was going to be a junior at Ohio State. He's from Memphis, Tennessee. Had a great freshman year, rushed for about 550 yards. Not so much last year, but they tried to redshirt him. It kind of made him mad. He jumped into the portal, and Auburn has pursued him and already contacted him. That tells me that somebody in that running back room might jump, because this is a guy you might have for 1 year, maybe two. And with Auburn losing out on Alvin Henderson, he's not a guy you're looking at to put on the roster and say, I got him for the next 3 years. Not that kind of player, but he's a definite take, and it tells me that maybe – somebody will be leaving along the way. There was a kid named Philip Bleedy, that it's either Blighty or Bleedy. I've heard it pronounced both ways. He's a defensive lineman from Indiana. He was on campus yesterday. Heard that went really, really well. He played at Texas Tech, where Auburn obviously needs help along the defensive line. That's one area. Isaiah Rakes, who Auburn recruited out of high school. He knows Auburn. He's toured it. He's at USC. He left from A&M and went to USC. Auburn's looking at him. The Traquan Fagans, the older brother of Anquan Fagans, who Auburn is recruiting, he has been predicted and crystal balled to Auburn from USC by USC beat writers. He was recruited by Charles Kelly when he was at Alabama, so that's a name to think about. And then from a receiver standpoint, Justice Ross Simmons at Colorado State, really 6'3", 205, lit up Deion Sanders in Colorado last year. He's one that looks at. And then the new one that entered, Keandre Lambert-Smith, I heard he's going to have a lot of schools looking at him from Penn State. They have a really high NIL package. He's another wide receiver that Auburn's looking at. So a couple wide receivers, couple defensive tackles, and a corner, and a running back. Interesting to me, the two strongest rooms in the two strongest position groups for Auburn, to me, were secondary and running back. So the fact that they would be interested in that position is taking on a portal and have made contact with both players makes me think something might be coming down the line in the transfer portal as far as exiting for Auburn.
And it all comes down to those post-spring conversations, right? When those coaches sit the guys down, and the players may sit the coaches down and say, look, here's, you know, here's how we feel, here's what's happening, and some guys stay, sometimes some guys go. And that's kind of what you're dealing with right now when it comes to the spring portal of who's going to leave and who does Auburn reach out to. And you just never know what could be coming down the pipe, man. And when it comes to this, it's changing every day. There's a new player that enters the portal, it seems like, on average, Daryl, about once every 10 or 15 minutes. And it's tough to keep up with. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you do this for a living, man. It's tough to keep up with all this.
Yeah, and as this show airs, I think there's only one kid so far that's officially jumped in the portal, Brendan Williams, the edge from Auburn. So far only one kid has entered the portal for Auburn, and it's Williams. Had a good A-Day game. More to come. I've heard maybe the receiver group, wide receiver group, may have a couple of guys jump in the portal. Maybe a defensive lineman or two. We'll see. But that's where it's at right now.
Yes, it is. And so we'll see what happens more as we go along over the next few days, over the next few weeks with the transfer portal as it is open for Auburn football and college football today. One thing before we let you go, Daryl, Auburn baseball. I know it's been a tough year, and we've talked some about it on this show today. They've got Georgia Tech tonight. You've been around this old school rivalry between Auburn and Georgia Tech in all sports. They've got Georgia Tech tonight and then Mississippi State this weekend. Your thoughts on Auburn baseball?
Very tough. This is a stretch where you'd like to say they just have to win every series to get to the postseason. It looks like they really have to sweep some series too, and they're fighting for their SEC tournament lives right now as well. It could start turning the other way if you beat an ACC foe, Georgia Tech, tonight, get off to Schneid a little bit, get some confidence. But I think you have to win tonight, and I think you have to get two or three for Mississippi State to get this thing turned around. If you don't, I think this season's a lost season, and you just start thinking about building for next year.
Mm. Well, hey, some more portal news officially, according to his X account, JD Rem, which is something we've been waiting for to kind of come down the pipe. He tweeted out 4 minutes ago, "I'm officially in the transfer portal." So there you go, Daryl. Another addition.
Well, he's been off the team for a little while, allegedly. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that makes sense that he's jumping in the portal.
Yeah,
it does.
Yep, it makes. I mean, it's like I said, something we've been kind of waiting on. So there's another one for Auburn that enters the portal. We'll see some more. I mean, just updates every hour, every day. It seems like on football and basketball. Something you alluded to earlier, the crossover of those is just a disaster. But, you know, NCAA, what are you going to do? Daryl Dappert's with us here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Man, it's always a blast. I look forward to this each and every week, man. Plug it all one more time before we let you go.
Monday mornings, WANI with our good friend Ben Taylor at 7:10. Of course, with you, 3:15 to 3:45 on Tuesday afternoons. Wednesday and Friday mornings, wherever you get your podcasts, and on YouTube with Zach Blackerby, Locked on Auburn.
Awesome, man. Keep it up, man. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk to you next week. Have a great week, okay?
All right. Have a great week, Jacob. Take care.
That's Daryl Dappert with us on the phone lines, joining us every single Tuesday. Double D, man, doesn't get better than him. Great guy, great information, and just a wonderful, wonderful friend. We'll take our final break, come back, and wrap it up here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Man, this has been a really fun show, and you can expect this type of show every Tuesday for the foreseeable future. So hopefully you enjoyed it, because we have Lindsey Crosby with us all of hour number one. Talking all things baseball, Braves, MLB, Auburn, you name it. We talked about it across the game of baseball. So that was all in hour number one. Had a really good time talking about that. Spencer Strider's injury. Lindsey did a really good job explaining what that situation is and sort of how he is recovering from that and the type of surgery that he got. Way too smart and over my head. So that's why I bring in the experts to talk about it. So he was with us talking that and Auburn baseball, sort of what needs to happen tonight against Georgia Tech and what needs to happen this weekend over in Stark Vegas. And then you heard it. We just got off the phone with Daryl Dappert talking all things Auburn athletics, football, basketball, a little bit of baseball in there as well as, look, it's portal season, man, and it's going to be crazy. It's going to be wild. You can try to keep up with it, and I'm going to do my best, but it's just the wild, wild west out there, man. It's just, it's every second of every day that something is happening in the transfer portal. Somebody's entering. Somebody's pulling out. Somebody's going back to their school. Somebody's going to a different school. Somebody's committing. Like, you just, you can't keep up with it all. It's impossible. You can literally sit on any website that keeps up with a live transfer portal tracker and just hit refresh. And about every 10 minutes, ding, there'll be another player. Ding, another player. And you just, and then somebody will disappear because they committed somewhere. It's unbelievable. So that's going to be a lot of the conversation. And I know a ton of you enjoy that and you want that. And that's just, that's where we are right now in college athletics. And so had a lot of that with Daryl. We talked about J.P. Pegues. We talked about, how about the news of, in case you hadn't seen this, Aiden Holloway, the Auburn point guard transfer, former McDonald's All-American, five-star recruit who had his freshman year here on the Plains. He's got a visit set, and he's going to visit Alabama in Nate Oates on Thursday. So we'll see how that goes, and we talked about that on the show today as well. So if you missed any of that, be sure you go and catch up with the podcast. You can find that at ESPNAU.com or just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. Also, a reminder that Auburn baseball tonight, you can catch that here locally on the radio on Wings 94.3 and WingsFM.com. You can catch that airtime 5:45 pregame, or that's pregame, and then first pitch is set for 6 o'clock. So you can find that on Wings 94.3. Across our other family of radio stations here at Auburn Network, Lee Scott Academy baseball on the air right now. Christian Griffin just went live over at Springwood School. He is on the air for a doubleheader. Lee Scott Warriors taking on the Springwood Wildcats. Warriors got a 10-0 run rule victory yesterday at home for Senior Day. We were there, and a big honor to be a part of that. That was a lot of fun. And so Warriors in their final region series ever in AISA Class 3A, because they've got some games coming up before postseason, but they're not in the region. So this is a big series for them, trying to get as a 2 seed in the playoffs. And then that is on Tiger Country 104.5, so you can flip over and catch that right now. Maybe flip back and forth if you'd like to, or you can go to tigercountry.net. That's a doubleheader versus Springwood. And then on 96.3 W Lee on the Auburn High School Sports Network, you can catch Jumpin' Jack Hutton as Auburn High softball hosting Opelika. Yes, the Tigers and the Bulldogs tonight. Auburn High and Opelika. That game will start a little bit later this evening. That'll be at 7 o'clock first pitch between Auburn High softball and Opelika. So that is on 96.3 W Lee. So look, we got stuff going on all night long. You got the drive coming up from 4 to 6, and then we got baseball, softball on half of our radio station. So go find something. There's no reason not to be listening. And then coming up tonight on ESPN, tonight and tomorrow, you've got NBA play-in games. We've got the Warriors and the Pelicans tonight on ESPN right here. We also, tomorrow, we have, as I had it pulled up and then I lost it, it is Warriors and Pelicans tonight. No, Warriors-Kings. Apologies. Warriors-Kings tonight at 8 o'clock. And then you have Hawks and Bulls tomorrow. So that's exciting. Baseball this weekend. We got Sunday Night Baseball with the Braves coming up on Sunday. So if you're looking to listen to the Atlanta Braves, you can catch that on ESPN on Sunday Night Baseball right here on ESPN 106.7. So, like I said, there's no reason not to listen to something tonight, this week, this weekend. Find it. Tomorrow, we'll be back. Uncle T-Bone will be back tomorrow as well. We'll talk all the latest news across the transfer portal, football, basketball. Who knows what's going to happen between now and then. That'll be 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Uncle T-Bone will be back tomorrow. So will I. Until then, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.